It's interesting. Arlene Foster saying she will work with those who voted to remain in the EU to secure the very best deal she can for Northern Ireland. She's pointing out in this speech that she gave that the DUP has the youngest ministerial team of any party in the UK. You heard Arlene Foster, you heard Mike Nesbitt respond to what Arlene Foster had said. The DUP's Gregory Campbell with us this morning. Gregory, good morning to you.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. What's this all about, your party leader pointing out all of the differences between yourselves and other unionists? Do you not have a puppet Sinn Féin anymore? Are they protected goods now, are they?
Did you read all of her speech?
No.
Right. Well, maybe you better start the interview again then.
What did she attack Sinn Féin over?
Well, their approach to the EU and the fact that Northern Ireland, we will build Northern Ireland now more secure than ever, that we're looking forward not just to the centenary of Northern Ireland, but the 50 years beyond it. And issues like that. I don't know that Sinn Féin would have agreed with any of that.
It just seems to be that the Ulster Unionist Party and indeed the TUV are the focus of attention these days, Gregory. We see statement after statement now from your party about lots of different issues, and it seems that Sinn Féin often remain untouched. And this is a genuine question. Is this about you leaving them alone because you're in government with them?
Look, Stephen, one of the most important and crucial decisions for Northern Ireland's future and the UK's future was taken at the end of June. And we're now in the process of preparing for the Brexit, the negotiations, and then the actual, as we would say it, the liberation of the United Kingdom from all of the bureaucracy and red tape and shackles of the EU. And thankfully, you know, when you look at the Hungarians voting over the weekend, you know, I think we're going to see some allies and some friends across Europe because there is definitely a mood swing in nations across the EU against the bureaucracy of Europe. So Sinn Féin are on one side of the argument and we are on the other. And that's a very, very fundamental aspect of our future. It will affect everybody. So I don't know that you could say that there was much in terms of common approach. But what we have to do is we have to look at what happens in Northern Ireland. People vote in a particular way. And if they vote for parties in sufficient numbers...
Well, people in Northern Ireland voted. The majority of them voted, of course, for us to stay in the EU. Your party's sentiment on this was against the majority of the people in Northern Ireland.
As the majority of people in London voted to stay, is anybody going to suggest they should secede from the UK? You know, it was a UK-wide vote, Stephen. And the vote is over and done more than 3 months ago. The important thing now is to prepare for what that means and to try and ensure that we are best placed. We've done very well in the last few years in terms of inward investment, in terms of our SME sector and jobs coming into Northern Ireland of a very high value. So let's build on that and let's ensure that in Downing Street they know and realise the peculiar position that we have here and that we have a land border with a nation state which at the moment wishes to remain within the EU, and then maximise the opportunities for that and build on that.
And what about this document that was commissioned by the Office of First and Deputy First Minister, which gave so many warnings of what would happen to Northern Ireland? The location for foreign direct investment might be less attractive to companies who want to do business within the EU. You're not worried about that? That's just one point I plucked out of it.
Well, Stephen, you may or you may not remember that the Treasury issued a document just in advance of the 23rd of June, which pointed out the sort of downsides of what would happen in terms of a Brexit vote, very few of which occurred. So, you know, people might argue about what was in that document, about what was in the document that the executive prepared. But the reality has been in the past 3 months that very few of the wilder predictions of what would result from a Brexit vote on the 23rd of June have actually come to pass. Very few of them have come to pass. There's been no 20% drop in house prices.
Yeah, but I hear this from politicians all the time that all of these warnings didn't come to pass. We haven't left Europe yet. Surely the test is when we actually leave Europe. Then let's see if the predictions unfold. For you to say that, don't worry, doomsday didn't happen, we haven't left Europe yet.
Stephen, the financial markets respond whenever they become aware of the possibility of things happening. I'm sure you're aware.
Financial markets are unpredictable. If you could predict them or I could predict them, yes, we would be multi-billionaires.
Yes, that's right. But the point is, the rationale here is one that is steadfast and consistent, that they respond whenever they smell a decision going to be made, not when the outcome of the decision becomes apparent 3 or 6 months later. So the markets responded on the 25th. Of June, the 26th, the first opening day of the markets after the vote.
But you will concede.
And they did not go down.
But you will concede that we don't actually know if the real dangers that were pointed out by those who supported remaining in Europe will happen until we leave Europe.
Well, Stephen, the dangers of staying in the Europe that is going to change fundamentally. And remember, don't dismiss the votes of the people of Hungary at the weekend. You know, I remember saying in the immediate aftermath of our Brexit vote at the end of June that the Europe that we would be leaving may well be fundamentally different to the Europe that people were demanding that we stay in. And look what's happening now in Hungary. Look what's probably going to happen in Germany and in other elections. We don't know what the future holds in or out. So nobody should present this as being certainty for staying in and uncertainty for leaving. It is a nonsense. It's not, the real world doesn't work like that.
Well, there's certainty for staying in, surely, because that's where we are now. So we're certain where we are now.
But you're talking about certainty of staying in the EU that most of us recall. That EU is fundamentally changing, as the people of Hungary proved yesterday.
Okay.
And my reckoning, and we will have to wait and see, my reckoning is that many political parties across Europe who are Eurosceptic will probably increase in strength in the coming months. But
okay.
We'll wait and see.
Okay. Well, look, give us what the DUP have done since they received this information, which you kept hidden from the public. In this document that was commissioned by OFM DFM,
the Treasury document wasn't kept hidden, and we saw how accurate it was.
Well, this one was. So that's the difference.
Right. That's
the difference between, I guess, the Treasury, who made a document public, Deputy First Minister, who did keep it hidden.
Which the Treasury document, which was put out there, has proven not to be accurate.
And you're able to talk about it because we all saw it.
It was proven not to be accurate.
This one had to be prized out of government, the Northern Ireland government, by a journalist, Stephen McCaffrey.
And you know how many documents and experts who predicted all sorts of things after the 23rd of June have been proven to be wrong? Tell me how many of them from the Bank of England governor down, who told us dire consequences, all sorts of outcomes were going to happen. And none of them have happened.
What's the point of commissioning a report if you don't put any stock into it, any value into it? What was the point of public money being used?
Well, public money is used to commission reports all the time.
But what's the point if you don't like it, you then just dismiss it?
Well, the point is, it is an internal document for use by government ministers.
All government ministers weren't shown it.
The point is, it was an executive commission document, Stephen.
And other ministers in the executive at the time were not shown it. It was kept within Sinn Féin and the DUP.
Stephen, see, if I were you, you're a journalist that was interested in documentation in relation to Brexit, I would be more interested in a document that was commissioned with public money by the Treasury, was out there and discussed openly by all sorts of politicians, by all sorts of media and commentators, and has proven not to be
accurate. But this document was specific to Northern Ireland. Okay, well, look, let me look at some of the details just to get the DUP's understanding. Look, that you commissioned the document, the DUP were part of commissioning the document, and I want to just see what your thoughts are around some of the warnings in it. For example, OFM DFM analysis said, the report said, regulations concerning transatlantic air traffic are negotiated at EU level, which could be detrimental to Northern Ireland's international connectivity. How's the DUP approaching that potential problem?
Well, what will happen there is that both David Davis, Theresa May and the other relevant ministers in Downing Street will be made very aware of our position and what we need to see happen. And it won't just be a Northern Ireland.
What does that mean? What you need to see happen? What does that mean?
Well, Stephen, what we're trying to do here is to ensure that we're best placed to take advantage of the opportunities that come about once Brexit actually occurs.
Transatlantic air traffic. Is there any, given the concerns published in the document that the First Minister and Deputy First Minister commissioned, to be fair to Martin McGuinness, he's saying that we're leaping into the dark, taking a leap into the darkness, he said. Arlene Foster doesn't think so. How's the DUP getting around our international connectivity problem outlined in the document that you commissioned?
Well, Stephen, why do you keep on about the document that you commissioned? It's almost as if you're more concerned about the fact that you, Stephen Nolan, didn't get a look at this document at the time it was published.
I'm not concerned at all. I'm getting a look at it now, so I'm trying to have a look at whether you've sorted some of the, you've thought about and you have policies around some of the potential issues that are pointed towards it. It goes on to say in other territory, a full external EU land border with the Republic would impact on the flow of people, capital, animals, goods and services. How's the DUP addressing that?
Well, Stephen, nobody that I have heard in the relevant sectors, i.e. positions of government, have indicated that there's going to be a hard border that is going to be restrictive or is going to prevent any movement of business, of tourists, of animals, of freedom of movement across the border between the Irish Republic and Northern Ireland.
Okay, so there will not be a hard border.
Well, the Prime Minister's been very clear on that. And, you see, the only people who seem to be predicting that there might be are people who believe that Northern Ireland should stay within the EU. Everybody else, I mean, the government of the Irish Republic say there shouldn't be one, the government of Northern Ireland say there shouldn't be one. The government in Downing Street say there shouldn't be one, and the executive in Northern Ireland is united in saying there shouldn't be a hard border. So why would the EU implement one in the face of the total unanimous view of everyone, all the relevant bodies in Northern Ireland and the Republic, in saying that there shouldn't be one? Why would the EU say, no, well, I'm sorry, there's going to have to be one? If they did, some people might say, how dare the EU try to implement that?
I can't think why the DUP wouldn't have wanted this report published to the public before the public voted, given some of the concerns that were highlighted in it about leaving Europe. I'm not too sure why you didn't disseminate this.
Similar concerns that were expressed in the Treasury document.
And the Treasury document was released to the public and the public were given...
And many people might say, well, wasn't that a convenient thing to have that released before the vote in an attempt to try and get the voters on side? But the voters, I'm afraid, saw...
Imagine treating the public with the brains that they have and letting them decide with as much information as possible rather than keeping people in the dark about information.
You're putting an awful lot of emphasis on documents.
On a document that was commissioned specifically for Northern Ireland, paid for by the Northern Ireland taxpayer, which your party was part of concealing from the public.
Well, Stephen, you see, you've made an assertion there. And, you know, how many documents are commissioned by the parties that make up the executive either now or in the past and which haven't been released and about which you haven't made a song and dance about. Because it's the normal course of events that these reports are commissioned for internal consumption and consideration.
Okay, look, one of the other things I saw in this in terms of the wider costs potentially of us leaving Europe to the public purse, Gregory, the report said there are likely to be very significant legal implications, which will require a significant workload to disentangle and restructure the Northern Ireland statute book. This is when we leave Europe. The legal and administrative resource required to do this would be significant. Have you guys costed how much that's going to be and how long it's going to take to restructure our statute book?
Well, Stephen, you know, all these issues have to be resolved with Downing Street. And they all have to be examined.
No, you're the executive. You're the government now.
Yes, I know, Stephen. But the Stormont executive, as well as the Scottish Executive and the Welsh administration, are all holding discussions with our own sovereign government about an issue that has never been taken before. Remember, people, I keep hearing people saying about, we're still no clearer, and, you know, we have the Theresa May hasn't spelled out exactly what is going to happen in Brexit. This is something that has never been done before.
And I get that, but your party...
Well, why wouldn't you then accept that it's going to take weeks and months to establish the best possible deal? And that's what we need, of course, the best possible deal for our people.
But of course, that's not my question, because you're right. The referendum has happened. The people in the UK have voted for us to leave Europe, so we're definitely leaving Europe. But you're the biggest party in Northern Ireland, and you campaigned for us to leave Europe. And there is a suggestion within this report that your party commissioned, co-commissioned, that there will be a significant workload and significant resource required to restructure our statute book. Has the DUP worked out the cost to the people of Northern Ireland for doing this since you told us to do it? How much is it going to cost? How long is it going to take? Did you have any policy thinking around this before you told us to leave?
Stephen, all of those issues will be worked out between now and the end of March.
So you didn't work it out before you told us to leave?
No. Well, Stephen...
Just hope for the best.
No, Stephen... Look, I know it's a Monday morning, and I know that you're probably looking to try and create some sort of headline. I understand that, and I'm fully au fait with that. And
here's the way of getting rid of the headline. Answer the question. Did your party cost this?
I even understand that it might be difficult whenever some of your background people are no longer there. I understand that, and I can understand.
I think I'm doing a pretty good job with you this morning, and I would advise you get more backroom people so that before you come into an interview like this, you can answer at least one of the questions.
I think you might be better and calm down. Just calm down and look at this in the round.
Yes.
This is an institution that no one has ever left before.
I'm asking you, has it been costed for Northern Ireland, Gregory?
Look, Stephen... What sort of a question is that? Has it been costed for Northern Ireland?
In terms of the very significant legal implications, which will require a significant workload to disentangle and restructure the Northern Ireland statute book. Your party has known about this for months now, because you had the hidden report. Have you done anything about it since you saw the report?
Stephen, the point is that whatever costings there are have to be offset about the costings of remaining. And people have taken the decision, and now we have to map out that roadmap for the future in conjunction with our own sovereign government in Downing Street and ensure that we come out the other side with the best possible deal. Now, that is going to take quite some time. It has taken some time to get us to the point where we are now. Thankfully, the Prime Minister has spelled out in terms of March next year, which is the latest time by which Article 50 will be triggered. And then there will be a 2-year period when we come out the other side with the best possible deal. That has to be our concentration of effort and endeavour in the course of the next 2.5 years.
Just one final area. Agriculture, big, big component of our economy here in Northern Ireland. The report says if the UK were to leave the EU completely, it could expect to be treated by EU members as if it were a third country under the international trade rules developed by the World Organization for Animal Health. These are extensive, says the report, including in relation to the import from and the export of livestock to EU member states, including the Republic of Ireland, resulting in added costs. What's the DUP's thinking around that warning in this report about added costs to the farming industry?
Well, we'll see how accurate that prediction is, along with all the other ones.
But what's your thinking around it? How have you addressed that concern in the report commissioned by your party?
Yeah, well, Stephen, it wasn't commissioned by our party.
Co-commissioned by your party. Right. I take it Arlene Foster's in your party.
Co-commissioned now. It was commissioned a few seconds ago. Stephen, look... The farming community took a decision, as did the rest of the community.
And the majority of people in Northern Ireland voted to remain in the EU. What has the DUP's thinking been around the added costs to the farming industry?
I noticed you didn't say what you thought the majority of the farming community voted, given that we're talking about farming-related issues.
Do we know?
Well, from all the tests I have seen, from all the samples I have seen, and from all the meetings that were held, the view I got was the majority in the farming community voted to leave.
Okay.
And very few of them have changed their minds
okay.
since.
I haven't seen that, but I'll take your word for it. What's the DUP's thinking around the added costs that have been warned in this report for agriculture?
Well, we don't know that there will be added costs.
Well, it's a warning in a report.
Yes, yes. And I come back to the Treasury report
okay.
that made certain other predictions which didn't prove to be accurate either.
So that's just been ignored, has it? Has there been any DUP thinking around the additional costs that this report warns will be loaded onto the agriculture sector?
Well, we don't know that there will be any.
Have you explored at least the thesis of this report?
Stephen, there are 2.5 years to prepare, and we're already preparing for the moment when our country is liberated from some of the red tape, the bureaucracy that has shackled not just farming, but other aspects of our economy for years. And thankfully, other peoples in Europe may well follow suit. And if that's the case, that's a good thing and should be welcomed and should be celebrated and should be prepared for. And we should take advantage of the opportunities that that gives us.
Just finally, Mike Nesbitt has criticised Arlene Foster's champagne breakfast, as he described it, tomorrow. What are your thoughts around that?
Well, I don't know if Mike's going or what. I'm not sure. Perhaps he's still trying to count out the number of people that have left his party and joined ours. And he's maybe examining and looking for the others that are about to leave. But, you know, we hold receptions.
You know names of others who are about to leave, do you?
Even though you're not going to get a headline on that either.
No, so no, I'm not even asking. I'm not even asking for a name. I'm asking a question, a specific question.
Monday morning, come on now.
Try answering any of these questions.
I know you like to hit the ground running.
My goodness, you're getting rattled this morning, Mr. Campbell. Do you know the names of anybody who is leaving the Ulster Unionist Party, or is this pure hot air from your party?
Well, Stephen, when you talk about hot air, what you need to do is examine in the course of the last 6 or 9 months how many people have left. Not speculation,
no.
Not hot air, but those who
no.
have left.
You're suggesting more people are about to leave.
Yeah,
I'm not even looking
denial,
the names.
Is there any denial of those who have left?
That's not what you've just said. You've talked about people who are going to
yeah,
leave. I don't
right.
need names from you because I understand they'll want to do that themselves. Do you know the names of any Ulster Unionist Party member who is about to leave?
Well, Stephen, you know what you need to do? You just need to wait and see.
Well, there's another dodge.
Well, you see, the trend is there. If you want to ignore the trend, that's a matter for you.
Let me just try one more time, because I did get my Weetabix this morning. I'll try one more time.
Right, how many did you take?
Do you know the names of any Ulster Unionist Party member who's about to leave the party? Yes or no?
Stephen, you just need to wait and see.
Right.
You need to wait and see. You've seen the trend, and I'm sure the trend will continue.
Have you and Simon Hamilton been getting media training? We ask him what way he voted in Europe. He won't tell us. We ask you.
Well,
I'm
really glad you brought that up.
We ask you if you know any of the names of anybody who you claim are about to leave the Ulster Unionist Party. You can't
Stephen,
even say yes.
Stephen, are you familiar with the concept of a secret ballot?
Well, it's certainly secret.
Are you familiar with the concept of a secret ballot?
Is Paul Given, who, when I asked him on the
are
television show on Wednesday
familiar,
night which way he voted, he told us?
Are you familiar with the concept of a secret ballot or not?
I am.
A democracy.
Yes.
You are, right. Hmm. Now, what's the fundamental thesis of a secret ballot?
You tell me.
That someone goes into a polling station, they go behind the screens, they take the ballot paper, they mark it in the way they feel is appropriate and that they choose to do so. They then put it in the black box. Those votes are then counted. And if people wish to tell others how they voted, and they sometimes do, coming out for surveys, opinion polls, or if they wish to write it in the
or
papers,
if they're political yeah. representatives and their party standing up
yes,
and saying, this is what's
correct.
Right for the country.
Yes, they are entitled to do that. But see, if they choose not to, they're perfectly entitled to do that as well. Unless someone in the media is going to say, I think that's outdated. I think we should demand to know how you, whoever you are and whatever standing you are in society, how you voted. Now, is that what you're suggesting? Because that's an overturning of the thesis of a secret ballot.
I wish you all the best for the rest of your Monday, Mr. Campbell. Thank you very much. Thank you.